welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, we'll speak with Senator John Hoeven about the Farm Bill, plus sit down with ag group CEOs to discuss how the war in Iran is impacting their sectors. But first, here are this week's headlines. The Environmental Protection Agency announced a temporary year-round E15 waiver and called for a permanent fix. The waiver, granted for the fifth summer in a row, allows for summertime sales of higher ethanol gasoline blends in 2026. Federal law doesn't permit sales of gasoline mixed with 15% ethanol, or E15, from June 1st to September 15th due to concern over reed vapor pressure. Although that's considered an outdated concern, a federal appeals court said only Congress can change the law to allow year-round sales of E15. Top Senate Ag Committee leaders agree on year-round E15 in the Farm Bill, but remain in gridlock over nutrition programs. Speaking at the AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit, Senate Ag Committee Chairman John Bozeman said he would put an authorization provision for year-round E15 in the Farm Bill if the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, which has jurisdiction on the matter, agrees. Senator Amy Klobuchar, the panel's top Democrat, separately told the gathering at the National Press Club she'd like to see a provision for the higher ethanol blend fuel in a Farm Bill. Klobuchar also used her remarks to reinforce a request to delay implementation of the state SNAP cost share provision in the Farm Bill. When asked if he could accept adding a SNAP cost share delay to the Farm Bill, Bozeman gave a clear no, citing the need to fix what he said is a flawed system. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins used a National Ag Day celebration to unveil a massive outreach phase for Product of USA labeling. Meat, poultry, and processed egg products from animals born, raised, harvested, and processed in the United States are eligible and encouraged by Rollins to use the voluntary Product of USA seal. The Product of USA final rule was released in 2024 during the Biden administration and went into effect January 1st. The revised standard closes a long-standing gap that previously allowed imported meat to carry the label if it was processed or packaged in the United States. USDA's campaign will include outreach through digital platforms, retail partnerships, and industry engagement to increase awareness of the label and its meaning. Senator John Hoeven was among multiple cabinet secretaries at the USDA announcement on National Ag Day. We asked him about the impact of the campaign.
You were over there this week on Ag Day, and certainly Secretary Rollins knows how to put on a good show and to promote. And so that's the idea here, is that they're really going to put some muscle behind Product of the USA. And of course, it's voluntary, but I think, you know, the way they're going to do it for all of the various companies and so forth that want to use it, I think it's going to be effective. Both because it's pretty cool. I mean, it's not, you know, cool or M-cool country of origin labeling as we know it. This is a voluntary label. It's Product of the USA. But I think it is going to stand out on the packaging. I think people like, you know, that concept. And then the other thing is, I think USDA under Secretary Rollins' leadership is really going to put some muscle behind it. So, yeah, I think it's going to be good.
Good. Domestic food security is really more important than ever, especially as we're seeing this U.S. conflict with Iran. You know, the Strait of Hormuz remains closed, and fertilizer and fuel prices have really been skyrocketing. When you look at this conflict from a big picture, you're specifically looking at the interests of agriculture, I mean, what are your thoughts? What concerns you most about what you're seeing?
So we've been wrestling with really high input costs for a while, along with low commodity prices. You know, ironically, we went through a long stretch where our ranchers, particularly our cattle ranchers, were facing, you know, really tough situation. They had a long down cycle. And so I'm really glad that our cattlemen are finally, you know, getting a fair price and getting healthy again. But on the farm side, you know, if you're growing something, you're losing money right now. And it's not just low commodity prices. As you say, the inputs have been a problem, particularly fertilizer costs. But, you know, obviously all of their input costs have been a real problem. And now, of course, with the conflict in Iran, this is temporary, but because the Strait of Hormuz is challenged right now by Iran, a lot of the fertilizers and phosphates and things like that that come out of the Gulf can't get to market. And so you've seen a big price jump and also shortage. I mean, it costs a lot if you can even get it. Now, this will be short-lived, I think, and I think already you're seeing real progress here with these negotiations and with our taking out Iran's ability to attack shipping. But the other thing is, and I've talked about this, I'm going to continue to talk about it, the Arab states are joining with us and helping in this conflict with Iran, including helping us stabilize transit through the Strait of Hormuz. But the European countries need to do the same. They have a big dog in this fight, and they need to get serious and work with us. And the net result is beneficial to everybody in terms of lower energy prices and lower fertilizer prices for the, you know, for the near future and for the long term.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
Some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable? They'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Passage of a war spending bill could be one avenue to move additional farm aid and year-round E15. I asked Senator John Hoeven for an update on those negotiations.
Yes, they are. Obviously, we've worked closely with Leader Thune. He comes from South Dakota, our neighbor state. He's got an ag background. He totally gets it. He's on board. We've been looking at, along with Chairman Bozeman, you know, we've been working towards a supplemental that would include perhaps the military funding, some weather disaster, and then some ag disaster to finish out the farm bridge assistance that, thanks to Secretary Rollins and USDA President Trump, we've been able to secure. So that's what we're working on. We've put Senator Bozeman and I have put forward legislation that would kind of lay out how it would be distributed. I think that would be effective. It includes specialty crops. And so the key here is the vehicle to move it, and probably the primary one that we've been looking at is the supplemental, as I described.
Yeah. Chairman Thompson, on the House Ag Committee, he joined this program last week and said, you know, his asks for that package is $15 billion in additional farm aid with $10 billion earmarked for specialty crops and then an additional $200 million for forestry. You know, I'm curious, is that kind of aligned with what you and Senator Bozeman are looking at as well, or do you have differences there?
We've been, yeah, and I should have mentioned that we've been working closely with GT on this. And so, yeah, we're all working together, and that's great because I think that really, you know, obviously makes our chances of getting it better and you know, getting it the right mix, touching the bases. But yeah, we've been working closely with GT.
Yeah. Do you think that $10 billion figure for specialty crops, is that, you know, attainable? $10 billion, yeah.
10 for specialty crops?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that may be on the high side, but I think there'll be substantial funding for specialty crops. I'm not ready to say it's going to be 10.
And the farm bill is still on the table too. And Chairman Thompson, you know, remains confident that controversial provisions like Proposition 12 and some of those pesticide labeling provisions would stay in, but Senator Bozeman has said that he's supportive of removing them if that's what it comes to in negotiation. I'm just curious, you know, your stance on that.
Well, we have to be able to pass the bill, which means we have to get Democrat votes. We can't just do it with Republican votes. So that issue is really going to be dictated by what we can do in terms of, we'd like to include those things, and we'll do what we can to include as much of those things as we can. But, you know, our equation is a little different in the Senate in that we have to have, it has to be bipartisan. We have to have Democrat votes. So we'll see, you know, we'll include as much of it as we can. And that's why Chairman Bozeman is just cautioning that, you know, we may not be able to keep all of it, but we'll certainly do what we can. Also, obviously, we would like to include year-round E15 as well. So we'll see what we can do there. As, you know, that would be important for our farmers.
Yeah. SNAP is another one of those contentious issues as well. Governors on both sides of the aisle across the country say it could be challenging to implement those state SNAP cost share provisions, and Democrats want to delay the implementation of that in the farm bill. You know, do you think you can pass a farm bill in the Senate without compromising on that issue?
Well, I think that we work really hard to provide a phase-in period. And so, you know, I know that there's been interest by Democrats to going back and revisiting that issue. I think that's tough to do. I guess I always want to caveat things with, well, we'll see. But I would urge caution on going back and revisiting that issue. I think we worked very hard to come up with an approach that if states are doing a good job and they're accountable, they don't have to cost share on SNAP. And also, you know, some of this discussion about how we cut SNAP, well, that's not the case. What we said is you have to be accountable for the work requirement, and you have to be here legally and getting the program. You can't be somebody who came to the country and is not a citizen, so forth, and getting the program.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Andrew Honecke has more on the decline in farms across the country in this week's Map It Out.
The number of farms across the country over the past decade has fallen dramatically. This map shows the number of farms lost and gained over the past 10 years. 12 states have lost more than 6,000 farms, including 18,000 in Texas, more than 11,000 in California, and more than 10,000 in Missouri. 35 states lost more than 1,000 farms. Overall, the country lost nearly 200,000 farms. Only three states gained farms, and the increases were small. New Jersey and Maryland led the pack with 300 each. This all comes as the U.S. is facing stiffer competition in ag export markets from countries like Brazil, while farm input prices are climbing so fast they're outpacing lower commodity prices. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Honecke.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put four kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
Welcome back. The war in Iran and closure of the Strait of Hormuz has sent fertilizer and fuel prices skyrocketing. We're joined by two ag group CEOs, Dwayne Simpson with the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives and Mike Seifert with the National Grain and Feed Association on our panel this week. To begin, I asked Mike how the grain and feed business is being impacted by the conflict.
Biggest thing is fuel prices. Every kernel, every bushel has to be moved. What we're seeing, shipping, rail, trucking, on the shipping side out of the Gulf, we were as high as 50 cents a bushel in increased cost when it started. We're around 20 to 25 cents now. On the trucking side, 2 cents a bushel or $20 every 100 miles of extra cost. And on rail, the way those contracts are structured, we think we'll start to see those costs begin to kick in probably in May in some surcharges. We're expecting 11 cents a bushel, $375 a rail car, $41,000 on a shuttle train. And so about 30 to 40 cents a bushel in increased cost, that's going to impact elevator margins, and that'll at some point, you know, impact farm gate prices as well.
Yeah, Dwayne, how about you on the co-op side of things and the farmers that are members of those cooperatives?
Sure. So everything Mike just said is true for our members. And of course, even when you're shipping freight from the Pacific Northwest to Asia, you've seen, you know, double-digit increases in freight costs. The biggest one, of course, the headline news is fertilizer prices. And, you know, most of the fertilizer that's going to be used in the Corn Belt, for example, is already here. But when you go nationwide, you're 75 to 80% full for the spring. So we're got about a 20% shortage, and most of that's going to come through the Strait of Hormuz. And because of that supply side shock, you're seeing price spikes. That's going to impact anybody that's looking for spring fertilizer. If the strait gets open in a reasonable time, we hope that that won't have an impact on later season applications. But for now, that's probably the biggest impact. We've seen Bloomberg and others that are talking about how that's going to have a food inflation price impact. I'm not sure that's true unless you actually see a shift in acreage or those types of things, which we haven't seen any indication that that's happening yet.
Yeah, Duane, ag groups, including NCFC, sent a letter to the president last week calling for additional farm aid, all the pressures on the farm economy right now. Can you kind of describe the asks and the pressures in that letter and how that's been perceived so far?
Sure. The number one issue that is facing all of agriculture today is farmer balance sheets. We've faced multiple years now where we've had lower commodity prices and increased input costs. And with the war in Iran, that certainly added additional stress with fuel and fertilizer prices. But, you know, with the disruption from trade and markets, with a number of other factors that have gone on, you know, all of agriculture is really, really facing, there's a few green shoots, but very few, are facing tough economic times. The administration helped with the bridge payments, but that's just not going to be enough to get us to the new farm bill payments that were part of the Reconciliation Act that was passed last year. And so what we're asking the administration to do is to add additional support into the Iran supplemental bill that they're going to be putting forward. Since that bill is likely to move, we think there's a good opportunity to tie those two together and make sure that America's farmers have the resources that they need in order to continue farming.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put 4 kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Welcome back. The National Grain and Feed Association held its annual meeting this week. We asked the group's CEO, Mike Seifert, about the biggest challenges and opportunities his members see right now.
We had over 700 people. It was our biggest convention in over 20 years. But I'd say two of the main things we heard were, one, obviously, transportation is always a huge issue for our members. So we talked about the challenges in Iran or with the war in Iran, but we also talked about some of the opportunities, and particularly legislation on the Hill. It's a unique year for us, not only is Farm Bill, which is a priority of ours up on the Hill, but you've got the Highway Bill, surface transportation. We're very hopeful about getting some changes to weight limits on 6-axle trucks up to 91,000 pounds. That would give a lot of flexibility to our members and producers for being able to haul grain more efficiently. Some 10% variances for dry bulk loads on axles, a big issue. Some of our members, producers, it's hard to get an even load of grain or soybeans on the truck. You get stopped, you get a ticket. Focusing on those things and hours of service. And then also Water Resources Development Act. It's up for reauthorization. And I mean, our transportation system, the resilience, the reliability of it here in the U.S., that is still our competitive advantage that we do have globally. I would also say one of the things we really talked about and our members talked about quite a bit was demand, whether that's international demand. Obviously, it's come out this week, President Trump, President Xi have rescheduled their meeting in China, very important. The trade agreements that the administration has negotiated, which have been very helpful, but also domestic demand. And I think one thing you hear our members talking a lot more about is that domestic demand, whether that's coming from what's going on in biofuels, and we're hopeful for permanent E15, some guidance on RVOs hopefully this week. And also protein usage and expanded feed usage there.
Driving domestic demand, very important right now, but also with some of their closest trading partners, Mexico and Canada, the USMCA agreement is set to be renewed this summer as well. And I'm curious, you know, what are the priorities of your group within that reauthorization?
Yeah, we're very, very supportive of the 16-year reauthorization of USMCA. We think it's been very good for US Ag and our members, obviously, number one market for corn now. A very large market and growing for beans and wheat. Our biggest priority there, beyond extending the agreement, is we have had issues with train shipments going across the border, some trucking, but particularly train, at times over the last couple of years, but really going back about 10 years, where Mexico has a very different zero tolerance on soil that is different than any other country in the world. And that has resulted in trains getting stopped at the border. When that happens, and if they require fumigation, it's $70,000 per train. We're very hopeful that as part of the USMCA discussions, that USTR, USDA will be able to work with Senaseca on the Mexican side to try and address what's really a phytosanitary barrier to trade.
Yeah, and Duane, speaking of markets, you know, you joined a panel at our AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit earlier this week talking about driving demand for different international markets. Can you kind of, one of the panelists actually said, you know, China's time as a top trading partner is, you know, over or nearing the end. You know, what are your thoughts? Maybe you want to summarize that conversation about, you know, the future of really driving those international markets for U.S. ag goods.
It was a great panel, and you know, I don't disagree that China isn't going to be the continued growth market that has been. Obviously, their population has peaked, and so, you know, we don't want to lose. They're still a very big and important trading partner, and we're excited that the meeting is back on between President Xi and President Trump, because we anticipate that there'll be purchases that come out of that purchase, that and we'll be able to get some of those markets back open. But really, the excitement and where the opportunities lie are in where the economies are growing. I think the most important one of the trade deals that have been announced so far is with Indonesia. And it's a population that has about 300 million people, just a little bit under the size of the U.S., and a growing population. They import almost all of their food, and America is currently the number three exporter into Indonesia, but that's just at 11% of their total imports. And so there's a huge opportunity for growth. The trade deal that was announced by the administration checked a lot of boxes that have been there for a very long time. I would also say that you know, we also support the USMCA reauthorization. One other place that we, some of our members are concerned about, is dairy. You know, Canada obviously has not lived up to the commitments on dairy that they made under USMCA. We'd like to see some more work there to try to open up that market from the protection. But also in Mexico. Mexico is working with Europe, and Europe is trying to push around the world this idea that you can't use common names, things like Parmesan or Swiss cheese, and saying that they have to be made in Parmesan, Italy, in order to name it Parmesan cheese. And so we want to make sure that our dairy growers that make cheese in the U.S. can make Parmesan-style cheese and sell it as such throughout the region. And we don't want to see trade agreements with other countries that would limit our ability to access those markets.
We'll be back with more newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke has more on China's rejections of American food imports in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
China is rejecting more food and agricultural imports at their border, and data suggests it's been particularly focused on imports from countries with which Beijing has political and trade grievances. There are many reasons why products are rejected at the border, including detections of hormone residue, as well as banned feed additives, and it's important to note that those would be legitimate. However, experts say China could be using enforcement as a retaliatory tool. This chart shows the number of times that American food and ag imports were rejected at the Chinese border from 2018 to 2025. You can see they started rising sharply between 2023 and 2024. There were 222 rejections in 2023, 476 in 2024, and 760 in 2025. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last.
U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. The fire went from north to south and it blew that way and it went straight down the house. Lost all of our sheep literally a week before we start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Both the House and Senate will be out of session next week for the Easter recess. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.